On this case together, if you would, please call the roll.
Representative Steve.
Here.
Representative Beth
Kett. Here.
Representative Colbert.
Good morning.
Representative
Dunn.
Representative Pike.
Here.
Chair Keller.
Here. Okay, the only thing we have in front of us today is HB 107. Mm-hmm. And if the committee would look and make sure you have version P, Papa, in front of you, it's a new CS. And then, Liz, if you would move us to adopt that as a working document, I would appreciate it.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I move CSHB 107-29-LS0465-P to be our working document for consideration this morning.
Great. Okay. So with that, did you have an objection?
Representative? I do for discussion.
Yeah, we don't need that. It's unless you don't want us to hear the CS. It was the motion was that whether or not we have it in front of us for consideration.
I'm just not sure what changes we have.
Well, we'll get all that in the process.
That's fine. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So okay, if the sponsor will come up and. Yeah, just for the information on the committee, Representative Seaton, and sorry I didn't start there, we'll go through the all the changes that have been made over the last version, and ideally what I'd hope is that by the end of the two-hour time here, we can have opportunity to vote on the bill. So, and we have also, just for the committee's information, we have Joe Heckman, who is the chair of the University Board of Regents, online to answer any of our questions. So.
Representative Gaddis, identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lynn Gaddis, and I represent District 7, the Greater Wasilla area. And thank you for letting me come back again with House Bill 107. House Bill 107, we've made some changes since the last time that we brought this bill forward. And if you'll follow, we have in the sectional analysis for your work draft version P, we essentially took the Board of Regents, consisting of 11, down to 9. And we'll move to item 8 in section 2. Excuse me, section 2, item 8, if you're following me. We had 4 at-large members that are Alaskan residents, and we brought that down to 2. Basically, the thought was an 11-member board, 2 things. It's a little bit more cumbersome, and certainly it's less expensive to have a smaller board. And then as we move on, it kind of shows the transition of how we would move to that 9-member board. As we previously discussed, where the areas that these regents would come from, and essentially we're here to answer any questions if you have any.
Okay. Questions from the committee? We got 2.
No, I defer.
Representative Jonathan Grace Tompkins, and then Representative Vasquez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gaddis, could you expand a little more on your rationale from the downsizing the size of the Board of Regents from 11 to 9?
Thank you. through the chair, Representative Grace Tompkins. It's pretty simple. An 11-member board is certainly a little bit more unwieldy than a 9-member board. A 7-member board is even a little bit easier, and quite frankly, I have a 1-member board in my business, and that's even easier. But that being said, it was just thinking that the costliness at this time of looking at all of our expenses and bringing it just from 11 to 9. It really wasn't any more complicated than that. And if I might, part that I may have missed based on our last committee meeting, when we talked about folks being in the region and then moving, at the time the bill had indicated if they moved from that area that they would no longer be on the board. Well, we relooked at that. I believe having lived off of the road system, and gee whiz, it's been a good 28 years since I lived in Dillingham, but I still remember that it didn't have roads. I still remember how we got our goods and services, and I still think that if you have lived in those particular regions for about 2 years, that you still get the drift. You can move to Anchorage, you can move to somewhere else, but you still can bring that valuable information to the table. So we said you have to be there at least 2 years, and then should you move and continue the rest of your 8 years somewhere else within Alaska, you could still work that. So thank you for letting me kind of push that in before I forget.
That's a great clarification. And Representative Christ Tompkins, you can bring up any concerns you have, but just when we have a discussion. But Representative Vasquez and then Representative Culver.
I defer to Representative Culver.
Thank you. Representative Gaddis, have you recognized that perhaps in your time here, you were on the Education Committee, chaired it last time, and in your experience out there in Alaska, that the satellite campuses appear to be underrepresented, and that there's consolidation at the main campuses, Anchorage and Fairbanks, as far as resources, and is this an attempt to perhaps level the playing field somewhat to hear other voices around the state?
Through the chair, Representative Culver, I certainly am not here to disparage the regents and their hard work that they've done in the past, but you know, we're at a precipice, if you will, for some huge change, and this is the perfect timing. You know, that goes hand in hand with looking at the MATSU, which where I'm from, when we look at how many folks actually came from that area, quite frankly, one of the fastest growing areas. Hand in hand, I think the timing is perfect to really look at regionalizing, where our state is over 50 years old, our university system as well, and I just think it's time to take that look at the change.
Representative Vasquez.
Yes. I'm delighted to see a more balanced approach as this bill goes through. As I pointed out in the previous committee meeting, and I'm looking at the breakdown of the University Board of Regents 1917 through 2015. It's a document here with a table. And it's obvious that the MATSU area has been chronically underrepresented. There are other areas, you know, that don't have as much population, and yet they seem to be more represented. So I'm glad to see this bill.
Seeing no more questions at this time, I just want to say thank you to Joe Heckman, the chair of the Regents, who's called in. I suspect you don't get paid one dime extra for being on the phone to answer questions and being on that hardworking Board of Regents. We thank you, and I just wanted to give the committee opportunity. Do you have a question for Joe or the sponsor?
For Joe.
Okay, sure. Representative Seaton has a question for you.
Thank you. We have a letter of March 26 in the packet here, I believe, from you. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And you're talking about having problems with a nine-member board populating the four working committees. That's audit, facilities, academic, student affairs, and planning and development. With only nine members, would you care to address that, or would that mean that almost the entire board would have to serve as a committee of the whole on every issue?
Through the chair, and good morning to everybody, Chair Keller, members of the committee, Representative Gaddis. I've been on the Board of Regents for 4 years, and I know that there was a comment made by Representative Gaddis that it's an unwieldy number. I'm not too sure what that really means. But 11, is not unwieldy at all in my 4 years on the board. And as a current chair, I feel that with the four committees that we have, and these are important committees, it would be difficult to have nine members populate them and then be actively engaged in those committees. The work of the committee could be impeded, and as such, the work of the board would be impeded. I'm retired, so I apparently have lots of time on my hands. A lot of our regents are professionals. They're working. The four that you spoke with in the confirmation hearings, they are professionals leading large organizations. There are occasions when they are not able to participate in a committee or in the board meeting. It doesn't happen often, but it does happen because, again, they have lives outside and they have livelihood. In that event, then we would have a quorum issue, we would have a problem doing the work of the Board of Regents and taking any action. So I'm a little concerned because the original bill, HB 107, and now the committee substitute, both of them are particularly problematic, and I see that they both impact our functionality in a great way and our ability to conduct business. We understand, Representative Gaddis, your reason for HB 107, and now, you know, although I would say that we do not understand the reduction from 11 to 9. But you had expressed concerns about non-representation of Matsu Valley on the Board of Regents, and, you know, at the last time we talked, you said, well, it's not about Matsu Valley, but, you know, it is about Matsu Valley. And I appreciate that, and I certainly understand that. I think the Board of Regents understand that, too. But, you know, we really can only express our concern about how this will impact our operation and our ability to conduct business. Two less members to do the work, and to make a quorum, it concerns me greatly. I believe HB 107's intent is to promote diversity, and I think you will see there's a lot of diversity on our Board of Regents, geographic, age, background, professional expertise. We have ethnic background, you know, we have, and even gender. So we have a lot of diversity, but we don't have the diversity in the aspect that Representative Gaddis, you are speaking. And that's, you know, that's not our deal. Regents are appointed by governors, and he and she can choose their appointees from a large pool of applicants. Then, of course, they're confirmed by you folks in the legislature. We're not involved. Our intent is just to, you know, to welcome them and to see, you know, how they can help us do the work of the entire university. So I'm very concerned, you know, where this is going. The best practices of Association of Governing Boards, which is a national organization that tracks best practices used by public and private universities, put the number at between 11 and 12. I may add that in my professional life, I was the president and CEO of the United States Bank, and I still sit on that board, and we have 12 members. And they are professional people, they are busy people, and it's tough to sometimes, even with that number, to do some of the things that we would like to do. So I don't consider 11 to be unwieldy. 9 is very problematic for me. And with that, I'll be quiet and see if there's another question.
Joe, I have a follow-up. Is there anything in the statute or the Constitution that prevents you from having a committee that includes people that are not on the Board of Regents?
I'm not too sure I have the answer to that.
Okay. As I look at your, I look very quickly through your bylaws, and I see that the chair will assign, quote, individual regions to external boards and commissions. So there is some presumption that there is engagement of the Board of Regents outside of just the Board of Regents. On several boards and commissions that I'm on and have been on, when we have an issue to be addressed, like, for example, right now the Board of Regents is faced with a search for the new president. Sometimes it's really nice for the Board of Regents to get input from somebody who is really going to help out as far as providing expertise or whatever. And I would just suggest that that maybe the bylaws could be adjusted to just point that out. Subcommittee of the Board of Regents could include people that are not on the Board of Regents. So, anyway, just...
Thank you, Chair Keller. I would like to point out that currently we are in the process of doing a presidential search, and the search committee does have members from the Board of Regents, members from our governance groups in the university, and also members from the community. So we do, in this instance, are engaging people that are not just on the Board of Regents, but outside of that, to help us look at selecting our next president for the university. You mentioned that the chair has the authority to appoint regions to other boards, and that indeed is true. So we do have two regions that serve on the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, they are appointed annually. They could, of course, renew their term and stay there if their interest is there to stay. But there are two regions that serve on that commission. And then we have two regions that serve on our foundation board, and now we have two regions that have been appointed to serve on a joint board between Department of Early Education and Board of Regents. So that's a new joint venture that we started last year. So the chair has that authority, and we have asked our regions to step up and be part of these other committees and organizations. Outside of the presidential search, the Board of Regents, to the best of my knowledge, do not have external ad hoc committees.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you for making my point, because I don't think there's anything that prevents you from doing it. And I just want to point out that if you're one of nine instead of one of 11, you have more influence. So every regent, well, what this does is increases, in my perspective, the input and the authority of each regent. Another question I have for you is the length of term for the existing regents. Is that defined in statute anywhere, or is that constitutional, or is it what? Can you help me out on that?
I believe it's defined in the statute.
Oh, that's my impression, too. Thanks. Representative Culver has a question for
you. Just to follow up on your comment, if I may.
If it's a question for Joe, that's fine.
No, I'm good.
Okay. 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 Again, thank you, Joe. I know that, again, I want to point out that I know you serve without compensation, and you have very much my appreciation and respect for the time that you spend on this big job. Representative Christ Tompkins does have a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Joe, can you speak to the four subcommittees that exist below the Board of Regents, Audit, Facilities, Academic and Student Affairs, and Planning and Development, and speak to how requisite it is that the members of those committees be populated by Board of Regents, or if there is not knowledge that it would be sort of specialized and Board of Regents would have unique access to serve on those committees. Could you speak to that sort of general question?
thank you for the question. I'm trying to clarify the question, and I beg your indulgence.
Well, Joe, if you would, I'm going to interrupt, if I could, Jonathan. Just to help clarify, I'm not at all. It's a good, great question. Are you asking what she sees as the advantage of having all the subcommittee members to be regents versus people from outside? But go ahead and try to reword, because she was a little confused there.
Yeah, Joe, is there any specialized knowledge that Board of Regents would have unique access to that's required for the members of those subcommittees to have to be able to function well?
To the chair, no. There is no specialized knowledge that is required of the Board of Regents to serve on these committees. When we have, for example, Academic and Student Affairs Committee, Regent Powers, who has a very vast interest in academics and in student services and student success, he wanted to be engaged in that committee. That aspect of our operations was appealing to him, and he has been the chair for that committee for the last 2 years and continues to serve on that committee and does an exemplary job. He is not a university affiliate. He runs a hospital. When we look at Board of Regents, we look at the vast experience that they bring to the table from their own particular fields. And we feel that, for instance, in my case, I was a banker for 26 years running the United States Bank. I have experience in audits. I have experience in facilities. And I have experience in planning and development. Different industry. It's not academic, it's private industry, but we can bring those knowledge bases to the table, and it's good to have people from outside perspectives in those committees so that we're bringing what we know from our industries also to help us make good decisions for the university. And I don't know if that helps answer the question or not, but if your question, for example, was that do we need a CPA to sit on an audit committee, no, we do not.
No follow-up? Okay, Representative Vasquez?
Excuse me, this is just a comment. You don't need an accountant to sit on the audit committee, but it really helps.
Yeah, we'll...
It really helps.
Any other questions for Chair Heckman?
Can I make a comment before we sign off?
Oh, all right. Okay, that's great. But first, Representative Seaton has a question for you, and then we'll give you a chance to comment.
Thank you. Joe, do you see any difficulty having the one governor replace all of the members of the Board of Regents except the student regent and having an entirely new board? This bill says that a governor could give a priority, but it doesn't require that, and so we would be authorizing a single governor to appoint an entirely new Board of Regents except for the student regent, I believe. And does that in any way seem problematic to you?
To the chair, I'm not sure how to answer that question. We will have a completely different structure if that were to occur, and how the Board of Regents then would organize themselves and conduct their business, I'm not too sure. An entirely new Board of Regents would mean that the regents that are currently sitting, I believe, if I understand your comment, it no longer exists. So I'm not too sure what my opinion would have a bearing on, you know, on any of this. So entire new Board of Regents would also mean that a new structure for the chair for the committees, and if that were to happen, it would be up to the new group to organize themselves and conduct business.
Representative Seaton has a follow-up.
I guess what I was really wondering was, when you have new regents on, does it take a little while for them to learn the system, learn how to, you know, the job of the regents, and to be able to, shall we say, work into the job? And if we would have a governor select an all-new Board of Regents, which would be in his authority under this bill, do you see that as being problematic as far as getting started and running the an efficient operation of for the university?
To the chair, sir, I do. When I was appointed for 8 years, I was a little missed by that term, because it seemed a rather long term to serve. But as I have served my first and then second and third and now fourth, I understand that what a steep learning curve it is for somebody like me who is not part of the university system. I did go to University of Alaska Fairbanks. I'm a double alumna, and I support community activities there. And as I mentioned earlier, my son is a student there. So I'm somewhat familiar with the university, but not in the way that a Board of Regents would, which is in the operations of it, in the running of it, administrating of it, what programs, what services, what buildings, what maintenance, all of those issues were not something that as an average a community member or as a parent, I was aware of. So there is a learning curve. It does take a year or two to understand exactly what do we do in this vast state, and geographically we are so spread out. You know, who are the people, what are the services, and it's a complex, very complex and large organization. So it does take the new regions some time to get comfortable with the knowledge of the university and its operations. So now we have four new regents, and we're trying to bring them up to speed as quickly as we can, because much has to be done with the fiscal challenges that we're facing. And we're thankful that we have professionals who understand business, they understand finances, they understand bottom line, budgeting, budgets, people issues, HR issues, so that we can do some of this work in an expedient manner. But it does take us some time to fully grasp the entire complexity of the system. I just wanted to add the fact that knowledge that the regents bring to the table is extremely critical and valuable. This is a really roll your sleeves up and go to work kind of board. We don't have the luxury of just sitting around and doing nothing. In fact, I think I work harder on board of regents and other regions do too, not the rest of us. So our backgrounds are very important, our credentials are very important in how we conduct the business of the university.
Now, Joe, I have a follow-up to the follow-up, but I want to comment on your comment and the discussion we've had in committee here for the last couple of weeks has really emphasized what you have just said. The knowledge and the understanding of each regent is so critically important. And what's occurred, I think, anew to me, is the level of the huge load, the huge responsibility that's placed on you, volunteer board, and it's massive, and it affects us and you know, directly, and so, again, just that I say that as a thank you. Do you know of anything in statute? I'm presuming that if the governor appoints, the governor can also dismiss. And so there's nothing, I don't think there's anything, any prohibition at this point of the governor dismissing any regent. Maybe that's a question for the sponsor, but it's kind of related to the question that was just put on the table, is that there's nothing in statute or constitution, I don't think. There is? Okay. Representative Seaton has something on that.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. On the March 21st legal services memo that Representative Gaddis provided to the committee, the bottom of the second, third paragraph says the extent of the governor's authority is also uncertain. However, it is a matter of some debate. An opinion from State Attorney General concludes that the governor does not have the power to remove a regent without cause. So okay. I think that that may be one of the answers we're looking for.
I'm guilty of reading just the first half of that paragraph. Thank you, Representative Seaton. Again, thank you, Joe. Did you have a comment before?
There was an earlier comment made regarding cost containment as a possible benefit for reducing the number from 11 to 9. As you have stated, and we are all aware that this is a non-compensated position as for regions. And I believe that in my March 26th letter, I had mentioned that the cost savings for two fewer people, as best as we could estimate, is less than $10,000. It's worth, you know, bringing your attention to if the intent is to save, you know, lots of money, it's not lots of money. It's less than $10,000. And I just wanted to point that out. I wanted to thank you for allowing me to dial in and express my concerns. I get to do that on behalf of the other regions because I'm the chair. So I appreciate that opportunity, and I appreciate you listening to my concerns and my perspectives on HB 107.
Again, thank you, Joe. And I just want to point out that in this budget time, every cost is on the table. We're all very painfully aware of that, and we all are suffering losses, and a $10,000 loss may not seem significant in light of the budget. It is significant, and I know that that's a perspective we have to take, and I'm assuming that's the perspective the Board of Regents will have to take. But thank you again. Okay, so let's give the Representative Gaddis, a sponsor, a chance to comment on any of the questions that have been brought up, and probably Joel will be listening, so if we want to go back to her, we can. But Representative Gaddis?
And thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate her comments as well. I tried to take notes as we kind of went along. For starters, the information that we found for the fiscal year 2014 for the Board of Regents was almost $300,000, $294,626. If you divide that by 11, and you have $27,000 per person times 2, so if we're going to take 2 from the board, we're going to save $54,000 a year, not 10. Also, I have a great techie next to me, or what they call a millennial, and if you Google what a proper business board is, the average size is 9.2. So if we're going to look at, so that's not really an uncommon board number of 9. Wanted to talk about the transition, if you will. Let me see what page that is, because moving from this 11-member board to 9, the governor may give preference to regents who are serving on the effective date of sections 1 through 3 of this act. So that would be on page 2, section 21 and 22. So certainly I would hope that looking for that skill that's already been acquired, the governor certainly can accommodate that. And I think in last, I think it's very, very important at this time that we look at making some true changes in how we do business. And I'm not saying that the folks who haven't been doing business haven't been doing a good job, but we're in a very, very different time now. And so with that, I really have no other comments.
I think we're going to have questions here from the committee for the sponsor. But I want to point out that Chris is here representing the university, and I think he may be able to shed some light on the cost per regent. So we'll give him an opportunity if he wants it after the questions. So, Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I appreciate this cost breakdown, but you know, the major cost is staffing costs. And if you have 9 regents instead of 11, does that mean you're going to fire the president or somebody that is a staffer to the regent? I don't think so. To the Board of Regents, travel, including meeting costs, graduations. That's where a regent goes to these graduations. Well, if we have 9 regents spreading over and going to those all of those travels to those things, it doesn't mean that there's less travel costs than if you have 11 regents that are going to different graduations of the universities. I mean, you're still flying to Dillingham, or you're still flying to Homer to have someone go there for those graduations. I mean, we could go in and say we're going to eliminate any regents participating in graduations, but we can't say that because you're spreading that travel among 11 people or among 9 people, it's not going to save us anything if someone has to go to each one of those university graduations. You know, computer supplies and stationery and commodities, I mean, changing from 11 regents to 9 regents isn't going to change the amount of stationery significantly that the Board of Regents expends. So I don't think that we can take the total cost of the Board of Regents and assume that it's equally spread among the number of regents, because I think most of those costs, building costs and everything, are going to be there whether you have 9 or 11. So okay. I just wanted to point out that I don't think that we can take this methodology and apportion it among how many regents we have.
Yeah. What we want to do before is have Chris come up and comment too. So thank you, Representative Gaddis and Drew. Identify yourself for the record, and you've avoided the hot seat here the whole time.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to try to avoid it now. For the record, I'm Chris Christensen with the University of Alaska. There was a question about the actual costs. I think as Representative Seaton has pointed out, a lot of the costs on the board are fixed costs. They're going to be identical whether you have 9 members or 11 members. The only savings would be the travel and per diem that 2 extra regents would save each year. We have actually prepared a fiscal note. I walking around the hall yesterday, I heard that there might be a CS today, and I went by and got a copy from your office, so I was able to prepare a fiscal note. It's $9,600,
okay,
which is a pretty, quite frankly, de minimis amount when you're talking about $1 billion a year,
okay,
board. I would point out, Mr. Chairman, that this is an unpaid citizens board. They don't get a stipend. I've worked for state government for 32 years. I've seen a lot of boards. I've seen a lot of agencies. I think personally, this is only my 4th year with the university, but I think it is probably the most complex operation that the state has in terms of its size, in terms of the variety of sources of revenue, in terms of the wide variety of functions it carries out. I was stunned when I began working for the university, looking at the amount of work that these citizen board members have to do, the things that they're expected to know. It's truly tremendous, and they do it all for free. Essentially reducing the members of the board from 11 to 9 saves virtually no money. And what it does is it takes these unpaid citizen volunteers and actually requires them to spend even more time. It requires them to work harder, to make up, the amount of work that those other two board members are not going to be able to share. I would also note, Mr. Chairman, the comment was made that there was a Google search done that showed that a typical corporate board was about 9.2 members. Actually, a typical university board is about 11 members. We are right there at the average. It's typically 11 or 12. That's considered best practices nationally.
I just, Chris, if I could, dividing up the number of hours spent on a board taking two off and then putting that back on, that's questionable accounting, just like maybe we were looking at the finances of it, because I just wanted to ask, this President's Search Committee that includes people other than the Board of Regents, is that pretty unique? I mean, or does the Board of Regents, maybe I should ask Joe this, but she didn't indicate that there were, that wasn't, it didn't seem like that was a normal procedure for the Board of Regents, but are you aware of any other committees that they form where somebody serves either ex officio or is a, you know, or even is a voter in that is not a regent that brings advice back to the board to save time and use efficiency, or is that not
common? And Regent Heckman might be the best person to answer that question. I know that the board brings in experts when it needs experts, just like the legislature brings in experts to testify in its committees. But the actual work, the knowledge over time, the actual work, the voting has to be done by board members. And they have created a committee system, much like you have created a committee system, to help divide up the work. It's why you don't do all the work of the Judiciary Committee or the Education Committee on the floor. You divide up the work. And that's what they've done, and that work is now going to have to be divided up among fewer people, which makes their lives harder.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Any other questions for Chris? Yes. Representative Vasquez?
Yes. How many subcommittees are there right now?
I believe there are four.
And what is the subject matter of each subcommittee?
I don't have the complete list. I know there's an audit subcommittee. There's an audit committee. There's a student affairs subcommittee, an academic subcommittee. Regent Heckman may have the complete list, and she could comment on how the membership works.
Follow up, Representative Vasquez.
Yeah, so going back to your earlier testimony, you're stating that what we're really saving here by eliminating two positions is travel and per diem for two regents, which total, you say, each year for each of them would be $9,600, totaling $19,200?
No, the total for both would be $9,600. And I have a fiscal note I can provide to the committee staff.
We'll get that to the committee. Thank you for preparing that.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have a question for Chris, but I'm just curious about this inviting additional members to be members of the committee, ex officio or otherwise. It seems to me that we would have to provide per diem and travel expenses to those people that we're asking to assist the board. So I don't see how there could be any savings in asking the board to expand their committee by asking non-regents to be on their committee.
That's a good point, and we'll consider that as part of the debate, you know, as we move forward. But is there any questions for Chris while she's here? Okay, thank you, Chris. Okay, I don't think there's anybody else online, and is there anybody in the room that wants to testify on 107? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony, and it is before the committee, and the first comment was Representative Drummond's. Is there any response to that? Representative Colbert.
Well, if you allow me the latitude, I wanted to. Representative Vasquez asked about the committee composition, and I just got done reading that. Audit committee, academics, student affairs, facilities, planning, and development. And when we were having the question and answer discussion, I saw right away a merger of facilities and planning and development as far as subcommittee work. So I didn't feel that the staffing or the number of regents were reduced, that would really affect the subcommittee work, because there could be probably some consolidation. I'll let somebody else comment. I have a number of debate points that I think are very important that we've learned through this process that I would like to get on the record before we move it. I can roll through it right now.
That's where we're
okay.
at. Go ahead, yeah.
All right, so my comments are no reflection on our current regents. I think you're doing a great job. One comment I would have is if we're paying a limited entry commission members $140,000 a year, we maybe ought to look at taking care of some compensation for our Board of Regents. We have an inequity there, and we're asking people probably spend a lot of time. They're probably working harder than some of these other outfits. Now, when we have regents commenting on their own committees, policies, there's a bit of conflict of interest there, and I don't know whether it is appropriate for regents without or the chair or without having a sense of the whole Board of Regency and official action. I have to discount some because there is ownership of that power structure regarding board composition. So I think it's really more appropriate that the people's representatives, us, the legislature, make policy calls like this. Whether or not it's a nine-member board, an 11-member board, whether we have regional representation or not. And so I do think it's appropriate for regents to comment on administrative issues, function, operations of the boards of regents and the university. But as far as policy setting on what that regency looks like, I think we'd have to kind of use our better wisdom with what we're seeing happening in legislation being enacted and budgeting, parity amongst our universities. And that's where the trouble lies. And I think this bill is in a response to that, because when we were taking up budgets this past February in subcommittee, when there was quite a large decrement proposed for the university, the comment that came back as a possible result of the budget cut was closing campuses. Well, we might have to close that Mat-Su campus or the Kotzebue campus or the Kenai campus. And so that indicates that we have a problem with centralization of the university and not enough regionalism and not enough support amongst the different regions of the state. So I think that exercise lends support to what we are doing here. Whether or not we go 9 or 11, I think that will probably work out through the process. But I think there's other boards that are divvied up by judicial district, but we tend to have a lot of the population concentrated within the 3rd and 4th judicial district, so that may not be a way to go. Whether or not this is the appropriate regionalization, I couldn't tell you, but we have difficulties. Those of us who represent areas that are not part of the main campus outside of Anchorage or Fairbanks have difficulties getting programs, attention, resources to these other campuses. So one other comment, I have served on a number of different boards, policy setting boards, and the most helpful issue that I found in budgeting was having somebody with a financial background. If we want to consider maybe down the road or perhaps a sponsor, but having a bookkeeper, CPA type person on a panel, it allows some in-depth analysis to the budget and advice to the other members. It's very, very helpful. That might be one improvement that at some point we look at the qualifications and someone with financial background on a board like this, because if it's a $1 billion budget, we certainly want to drill into the details. I won't hog all the time, but I think we pretty much covered it. I think we could consolidate some of these subcommittees, for instance, the facilities and planning and development. We're not going to have as much money to do campus expansion, so there'll be less work for that committee. And I'm a supporter of this bill. You know, it's not perfect, but I think it's the conversation we need to have is we need all campuses of the university system at the table to weigh in and make sure that we have less duplication and better programs and an understanding of that way we could have folks with expertise. So if we had somebody from the Southeast campus in the Juneau area with that regional expertise of what the curriculum, what the academics are at this campus. That would be most helpful, I think, to the other regions. We could have some specialty. So with that, I'll yield the floor and...
And we can have another comment later, too, you know, as long as time allows. But I do want to make a clarification before I go to the next question, and that is my comments on the subcommittees on the Board of Regents. Believe me, the implication of my point is that the Board of Regents controls itself and structures itself on this stuff. You know, there's nothing in statute that directs or undirects that. That's their call. And I was not in any way, shape, or form suggesting that the legislature ought to be telling them to have subcommittees that don't include regents. That's not the issue. The issue is we're, that the options are there, and it's their option, not ours. Representative Christ Tompkins.
Thank you. I have a number of thoughts that come up from listening to discussion today, reading Joe Heckman's letter yesterday, listening to her comments, listening to Chris's comments. I don't see an overwhelming logic for the reduction from 11 to 9, at least from the information that I've seen in the last 24 to 48 hours. I think Representative Seaton and Mr. Christensen made a fair point that it looks like most of the costs, at least that I see in the sheet provided by Representative Gaddis's office, seem to be fixed, and so that the cost savings, you know, $9,600. I mean, if we're scrounging around for $9,600, one, I think we should probably do it through the finance subcommittee process, and two, I mean, we're going to need to move the decimal point when we do it, because that's, I mean, not to say that we shouldn't be scrounging around for every dollar we can, but I'm just not sure that that's the overwhelming motivation of the reduction in Board of Regents. They're probably far more efficient and effective ways to capture far more than $9,600. I'm troubled by, the first I've ever heard of the Board of Regents and the committees that exist in the Board of Regents was the letter that Joe wrote and that we received, I believe, yesterday. And, I know nothing about the internal functioning of the Board of Regents. And the sort of prescriptive comments that, you know, potentially the Board of Regents should merge committees, I don't feel like we're really in an adequate position to make those suggestions, knowing next to nothing, or at least I know next to nothing about how the Board of Regents works in their internal committee process. I think the possible suggestion that non-public members serve on core committees for the regions. I mean, I guess it already happens to a certain extent with a search committee, as Ms. Heckman mentioned, but I would just relate it to the legislature, and if this education committee or the finance committee were to take on non-legislators as voting members on the education committee, I mean, if Joe were to join us at this table and be a voting member of the education committee, one, I'm sure she would have comments on this bill, but I mean, two, it would be a strange political reality, and just wanted to at least offer that analogy. And then finally, I mean, the basic question is, you know, reducing from 11 to 9, and, early in the committee, I popped in average board size Fortune 500 into Google, and with its all-knowing powers, it spit out a link to a report from Institute for Corporate Governance from Deloitte & Touche looking at the S&P 500, and according to that study, the average size is 10.9, not that that's necessarily prescriptive, that every large organization needs to have 10.9 round up or round down numbers, but it sounds as though there is some sort of acknowledged best practice in the world of large organizations or large corporations that 11 seems to be a workable number. Alaska Airlines, I checked, for instance, has 11 board members. 11 voting board members. What other people do, you know, it's not necessarily guiding what we should do, but the fundamental question I want to ask myself is, you know, is there a problem, and do we need to solve the problem? And I struggle to latch on to any piece of testimony or comments or evidence that have indicated that there is, in fact, a problem with 11 and that 9 would provide a solution to the problem that exists with 11. And so I struggle with the proposal, although it's certainly a cause for lots of good thinking and thought problems. But it gives me some caution with this piece of legislation, and I wanted to offer those comments.
Representative Grumman?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I fully understand the reasoning behind adding a member from the Mat-Su Borough. That makes all the sense in the world. And in fact, I appreciate this gigantic binder of information that the sponsor of the bill provided for us. I'm going to keep that as a resource once I figure out what it provides us a lot of information, but it provides us almost no information as to the reason for changing the size of the board, the number of people on the Board of Regents. That part makes absolutely no sense to me. We're asking an extremely complex organization to make major changes in its governance in a time of severe budget cuts and crisis. I don't think this is the time to change the number of members of the governing body of our university. This is a university that has campuses essentially in Minnesota, Georgia, and Missouri, main campuses, and minor campuses even further away from that. And I relate that to my own experience of getting nervous about moving down here to serve as a legislator last year, along about December. And then I looked at my map of Alaska superimposed over the lower 48, and I go, oh, I'm just getting ready to move for my job from Missouri to Georgia for 3 months. Once I realized that the scope of the move that I was being asked to make, I calmed down, buckled down, got to work. However, we're asking a group of 11 volunteers who already manage a very large, complex, far-flung organization to do it with less makes no sense, particularly since the cost savings is almost minuscule. And I'm sure that the regents frequently have telephonic meeting participation. I'm not sure what their rules are about that, but myself as a member of the 11-member Anchorage Municipal Assembly and the 7-member Anchorage School Board, we frequently participated in meetings and were able to vote from a distance if our personal lives or our business required that. I completely agree with adding a resident of the member of the Mat-Su Borough. The population statistics absolutely back that up. The size of the Board of Regents by two people will reduce the diversity and will reduce the representation of the rest of our far-flung state, which also has every right to expect to be represented. My experience on the Anchorage School Board gave me the opportunity to meet hundreds of school board members from around the state. Our school board was really one of the smallest ones for the largest school district in the state. However, we had significant staff support, as I'm sure that the regents do. Anyone who's ever served on an audit committee knows that the board members don't perform the audits themselves. We hire professional CPA firms to do the audits, the single audit, whether it be a single audit or the annual audit of the organization. So requiring a regent to be of a particular business background doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. From my own experience, with good staff help and the hiring of contractors, this is not something that any organization does within itself, which is the purpose of an audit. Anyway, I'll stop at that point. I completely support the Matsu Borough addition member, but if there was a way to divide the question or go back to the first version of this bill and add the Matsu board member and leave the number of regents alone for the time being, that's what I would be supportive of, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you probably noticed from my questioning, I'm troubled by this bill. We have the University of Alaska, which is one of the most important institutions of the state, and now we are saying that we're going to reorganize them at a time in which we are needing some very vast changes to be considered. We have an 8-year, I believe it is, term of office that's in there so that goes beyond one governor, so that you have a rolling number. This bill establishes that one governor will appoint every region. The other problem is that we have now put in this bill a particular consideration so that seats open up from only a small portion of our state. So let's say a seat opens up from the Kenai Peninsula. We need to have somebody from the Kenai Peninsula that is willing to serve and has time to serve and has the expertise to serve on a board which requires a vast amount of time on a voluntary basis. So the pool gets small. Now we have a smaller board, and we're talking about having some expertise, financial expertise or academic expertise or facilities expertise.
Well, we haven't seen that's not part of the bill.
Right? It is part of the bill. The bill says that we are going to regionally select these people. We have said in the past that we want a board of regents that has a lot of diversity and a lot of expertise coming to the. There is no requirement for the expertise,
right.
But if you lose the expertise of a certain issue, let's say financial, the banker that is there and brings some financial expertise, the only seat that opens up is one regional seat, and you're going to have not only someone from that region that has the volunteer time and everything else, but to have the well-rounded board, well-rounded regents, you're going to have somebody who's going to do this very difficult job on a voluntary basis and a lot of time that fills in that expertise because you don't have the entire state coming forward. One of the problems that I find with the materials that we got, there's a lot of materials on who was there. What we don't have is the people that over time has applied to be on the region. So we don't know from this whether there have been members consistently from the Matsu who have put their name forward to be on the Board of Regents. Now, we might be requiring that the governor go out and search the Matsu for somebody who would do that, but we don't know that we have people that have been coming forward on a consistent basis to volunteer their name from each one of these regions that we're now saying a Board of Regents has to come from. So, Mr. Chairman, I think that reorganizing the regents in this way is looking at changing a whole lot of the dynamics of how the university Board of Regents would function and where their expertise would come from and how the different people from that and I'm not just picking on the Matsu, I'm saying the Kenai as well, because I'm not saying that every time that there is a opening on the Board of Regents that we've had somebody from the Kenai Peninsula that has put their name forward for the Board of Regents, because it's a tough job, a long job, it's a very long term. People have to be very dedicated to do this, and so I'm concerned about all of that, as well as, you know, we are elected representing districts, and we support our districts, and we come here to do that, and as well as to consider the statewide implications. And I think putting these into regions so that you are elected to represent your region, basically, because you have a regional seat, is going to give a whole different perspective to the University of Alaska and advancing the university in our state. So I'm not going to support the bill.
Okay, thank you. Representative Tallarico.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sounds like a good time for opinions.
Yeah.
And just a couple things, an observation of mine. Since I'm kind of a new guy here, we just had a fiscal note delivered to us during testimony, and that seemed odd to me. I don't know if that's typically happens, but that seemed odd. Not that I don't appreciate the fiscal note, but seems like our normal process is those fiscal notes are accompanying our documents before we get started. I just thought I'd bring that up, but
I can't help but add it's one parentheses too.
I just want to mention that seemed odd, and some of you that have quite a bit more experience, maybe you can talk to me about that afterwards, and let me know if I'm on even going down the right track there. I think one of the things that was brought up, and I'd seen in a document here, was about a quorum, which I think is interesting. It's been my experience on a lot of public boards and everything that, quite honestly, the smaller your board, the easier it is to gather a quorum. It's not more difficult, but typically it's easier. It's just a numbers thing for me. The history of this, and no offense to anyone, doesn't mean much to me, where previous regions had been from, because I think if we look at populations and we look at the development of the state of Alaska, obviously with the main campus starting in Fairbanks, and Fairbanks having a reasonably large population during territorial days, and travel and logistics and everything, it only made sense that you would have more people close by so that you could actually gather the regions together. I think prior to the transportation that we have available to us now and the ability for people to connect and get to meetings, that doesn't mean a lot. But saying that, I see in some of our documents people are worried about promoting regionalism is kind of the way they put it, or geographic constituencies. And I have to look at this in the actual perspective that it appears to me, and this is just my own personal opinion, that the more regional you have, that you designate six different seats out of this board that have to come from different regions, that actually, I think, really pushes back against regionalism, in my perspective. I mean, if you have 11, if you have nine or you have 11, but you have obviously a dominant sector of that board from one particular community, that promotes regionalism. Making sure that these people come from all of these different areas, I think actually, I can't see anyone being able to overcome someone from the municipality of Anchorage dealing with people from four other municipalities or five other municipalities having a regionalism advantage. I actually think that really creates more of a broad base and a spread. May not be popular with people from my area, but that's the way I see it. So I think that's kind of an important feature here. And I actually know people in the municipalities that are listed in here. I think that I know people that are highly qualified and capable of serving in this capacity. Now, whether or not they would ever put their name forward, I don't know. But I know at least three people, I think, from every one of these that are listed that I would have no problem with being on the Board of Regents of the University of Alaska. They're highly intelligent people. They're very thoughtful. They've got a lot of great experience and background. So I've kind of been on the fence with this and everything, but times change, and our state has changed, and the demographics have changed dramatically. So I think it may be a little difficult to swallow, but I could see this change being very appropriate for, in particular, making sure that we have representation from all over. I think that's pretty appropriate for a statewide function. And that's really what we're talking about in our university. We have a statewide university with campuses all over. And our main schools, you know, our main campuses are in different places. We probably have about 35,000 students. So I think that representation is probably a really good idea. And the number of board members, I feel somewhat like the chairman. I don't think $9,600 is insignificant in the times we're in. I really don't. It may not seem like a lot. I certainly wouldn't base a decision on a $9,600 $9,600 bill. But at the same time, times have changed, and so I'm finding myself being very supportive of this as we move forward. I think it makes good sense, and actually I'd like to push back against the regionalism, and I think this has a tendency to do that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Can we take a brief at ease?
Yes.
No. Okay. Yeah. Brief at ease. Oh, I'm sorry. Did you?
That's okay. I'll roll with.
No. No. Please. We're back on the record. Before I see if there's other comments on the bill before we vote, I just want to go back and talk a little bit about the 9 versus the 11. And just to start out, I'm a little bit surprised that the Board of Regents and the university is resistant. I don't get it. I've been on boards and commissions before, and I've been on boards and commissions of 12, and I've been on boards and commissions of 7. You got to understand what the Board of Regents does. They work for the governor, and they bring forward information. They make decisions on policy for the whole university. And it's just intuitive to me that a decision by 9 is easier than a decision by 11. And the reason I'm taking time to put this on the record is that I'm going to ask the committee to leave at 9. And when we go out, even though I believe, and we can hear from the sponsor in this, I believe that the sponsor is a little bit ambivalent, doesn't really mind how this goes. But I would ask you to let this go and let it be a decision and a discussion, in the next committee of referral or even on the floor. And the reason is that I'm just kind of maybe appealing to the Board of Regents on this to reconsider, because and to us as a matter of policy, you got to remember the first of all, the comparison between the Education Committee and the Board of Regents. Forgive me, but that's ridiculous. That's utterly ridiculous. We don't deal with administrative stuff. We don't hire a president. This is an administrative element on the Board of Regents that's very, very different than us. We get elected and we represent a contingency of Alaskans, and we are answering to them. And this is just different. This is a board that gets things done. And this is all in the context, keep in mind, of a budget that has gone from 2006 till now, from $750 million, roughly, I'm just using really round numbers, to 900 and some million. $250 million increase since 2006. And we're saying, in our nexus with the Board of Regents, we get to confirm. We're 7 of 60 here that get to confirm the Board of Regents, but our nexus is purely a portion of the university budget. That we have responsibility and accountability to the people that we represent. So our nexus with the Board of Regents is we beg them to talk to us, about the policies and this one thing on the finances. And when you look at the finance, the way the finances have increased, I think it's completely appropriate that we're interested in a bit of a causing a revaluation and a restructuring, if that's possible. So anyway, I'm certainly open to somebody on the committee making a motion to amend back to 11, and I would oppose and ask for a vote, but my preference is that the committee would leave it in there at 9 and move it out with the understanding that the discussion will continue. And maybe I can be convinced on that. I don't know. And I do confess that was my idea. And it was my idea based on the fact that, I've been on both sides boards, and I don't know who I'd rather be on, because it's very difficult for the staff to get a consensus, for example, from a group of people that have very diverse responsibilities and interests and distractions in their lives.
and it just makes a more efficient system. And remember, again, the Board of Regents does work for somebody. They work for the governor, and they work for the people of Alaska as a whole, the university system, and whatever. So, you know, it seems to me like governance-wise, it's a lot smarter to have 9 than 11. And I, from the comments today, it looks like I'm losing that debate. And I, you know, but I would just ask that it stay on the table if the committee would choose to do that. Any other comments on the bill?
I have comments.
Representative Vasquez?
I wholeheartedly support adding a seat from the Mat-Su borough. It adds a geographic diversification. But I'm troubled changing the composition of the regions from 11 to 9, especially when I hear the testimony this morning. I don't, maybe I missed something, but there doesn't appear to be evidence showing that they have had a problem in meeting a quorum with 11. Did anybody see any evidence with regard to that particular issue? I'm seeing people nodding their heads, which means it looks like. So aside from that, I mean, I've been on numerous boards. These are volunteers. We have a big budget of over $1 billion. We're in critical times, deficit times, a time where more time and energy, when things are good, boards and commissions don't do as much work because they really don't have to look too much of what's going on. Everything is going well, but in critical times like this, I would say the regions have more work to do. And in deferring to their testimony, how they operate in subcommittees, if they have less of them, there's more work for the rest. So I am swayed by the testimony I heard this morning, and by the fact that I've not heard any evidence that it's a problem to meet a quorum if there are 11 regions like there are at the present time. I am concerned about giving one governor the power to appoint all of the Board of Regents. That's also a concern of mine, as pointed out by a colleague. So, in essence, I'm agreeing with some of my colleagues about that issue and also about the changing from 11 to 9.
Any other comments on the bill as a whole? And again, I invite the committee to go ahead and make the amendment, conceptual amendment, to go back. And like I say, I will oppose. I feel strongly on it. But I will not feel rolled or cheated or hurt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm glad we're having this discussion. In between making my last comment and this one, I did a quick little Google search on boards of regents of other states. I think comparing the Board of Regents of the University of Alaska or any university to a business board or a corporate board is a mistake. This is not a similar function. New York State, where Representative Vasquez and I both attended Cornell University, which is not only an Ivy League private college, but is the land-grant college of the New York State University system. It's a very unique. New York has a bunch of very unique campuses and colleges that are part of its statewide college system. It has 17 members on the New York State Board. Granted, they have 17 million people. But by that rationale, we should have one member of the Board of Regents, less than a million people.
Excuse me, Representative Drummond.
Yes, sir.
If we're going to talk about that, what I'll do is I think Vice Chair Vasquez wants to move an amendment on that topic, and then we'll have the debate on that. Representative Vasquez?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to propose a conceptual amendment to CSLS 0465/P, composition of the Board of Regents from 9 to 11.
And just a confirmation, if there's any confusion, Representative Seaton did not object to the fact that we made this the working document, as I remember it. So I just wanted to put that on the record to make sure. Okay, I'll object to the amendment, and we'll just go if it's okay, we'll just call a roll in light of time.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton, did you have a comment on the objection?
I did, and that is that changing the number from 9 to 11 no longer fits within the CS unless we reapportion how the other members are. We had how 9 members are chosen in the CS. We don't have how 11 members are chosen in the CS. So if we're changing from 9 to 11, we need to reapportion how the other members of the board are chosen.
Representative Seaton, that's fine. To me, conceptually, that means they go back to the two members at large like in the previous version, so there'd be 4 members at large instead of regional. That's the way the original hearing was on the bill. On that topic, Representative Colbert.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would make a secondary amendment to the conceptual amendment that the additional 2 members would go into the public member category for a total of 4 public members.
Okay, so no objection then. Back to the amendment as a whole.
Mr. Chairman, I move to add to that conceptual amendment an amendment to page 2, line 4, subsection 8, delete 2 and insert 4 members at large who are residents of the state, to address the concern that was just stated.
Okay, so that was said twice, and that, so I'm sure that is on the record and covered. So, and it's.
I think we adopted the secondary previously, just for point of order. Thank you.
Okay. So, is there any other comments on the amendment as amended? Representative Drummond.
Just a question, Mr. Chair. There are a number of other sections of the CS that apply to the transitioning from 11 members to 9. Because this is a conceptual amendment, does that mean that should the amendment pass, that those other sections of the CS will be rewritten?
Yes, Representative Drummond.
Okay, thank you.
Good point.
Call the roll, please.
This is Amendment 1 as amended to CS HB version P. Representative Seaton.
Pass.
Representative Vasquez.
Pass. I mean.
Colbert.
Yes.
I say yes, I'm sorry. Yes.
Representative Vasquez is yay. Representative Drummond.
Yes.
Representative Price Thompson.
Yes.
Representative Tallarico.
No.
Representative Seaton.
Yes.
Sheriff Kelly.
No. So the amendment passes.
5-2.
Okay. So is there any other comments on the whole bill as amended, CS as amended? I see.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton?
I'm trying to figure out between the amendment that we just made now and the transition language, and I presume that we're still with the portions of the transition language that we said that are going to change. We still have it that the governor will appoint everybody, but that if a person moves, they get to complete their 8-year term. Even though they no longer represent the MAPSU, if they move to Anchorage, they'll still be considered the MAPSU representative, even though they've moved to Fairbanks or the Kenai Peninsula. Or I'm unsure how that works if they're going to be completing their term, and yet it's a long term, and yet they were selected as a MAPSU representative who now lives in Anchorage. And I just want to get some discussion on
Representative Seaton.
What that?
Restate your question, because the transition section there, you know, as far as people moving, has not changed because we went from 9 to 11. So is this a new question? I'm just trying to figure out, or are you trying to bring up the question what that wasn't, that we didn't address it sufficiently on the first bite?
Thank you. I didn't. I think it was addressed sufficiently in the first bite and going to adopting the CS from the previous version. The previous version had someone terminate when they changed residency. The current version on line 10 says, who ceases to meet the residency requirement may complete the regent's term of office. So somebody from the MATSU who's elected would still represent the MATSU even though they lived in Kenai. And I'm trying to figure out how this all works, because that would be a seat for the MATSU even though they had moved, and that the next available regent wouldn't be another person who represented the MATSU, but would be for that that office of whichever one came up, whether this is Fairbanks North Star Borough would come up, but or I'm not sure how it works. And so I think the bill needs more work. I don't think we quite understand how it's all going to function. And so I just wanted to, under committee discussion before we move.
Does a sponsor have a comment on this? Because it is something that needs to, a new question that didn't come up, I don't think, in totality earlier. So if you would, Representative Gaddis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, Representative Lynn Gaddis, District 7, the Greater Wausau area. Through the chair, Representative Seaton, it is part of the bill that has not been amended, so I'm assuming that it's going to keep in. If you residency is 2 years in your area, so for instance, if I'm 2 years in the MATSU and I end up moving to Homer, I'm still the MATSU seat for the next 6 years in Homer. So if they need to choose somebody, let's say in the Homer area, they may, because I'm still the MATSU seat for the next until my term is over. If that clarifies.
That's what I understood you said in the testimony, and I'm a little fuzzy on why that doesn't. What language doesn't fit there?
Mr. Chairman, I was just wanting to clarify.
Okay.
Because
okay.
It's different than the original bill. The original bill, 107, has it that if your residency changes, you terminate, and then a new regent from that area comes in.
Okay.
The current one says that if you were previously in the MATSU and you were appointed, you can move at any time. You don't have to stay there for two years, and your full term will be served wherever your residency is. But you still fulfill that seat for MATSU. And so I just wanted to
I'm glad you clarified
bill was intended.
I thought, I understood that. I may have missed some nuances or whatever, but Representative Gaddis, do you have one more comment?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And really, that's the involvement of good committee work. The first time that we had this discussion, committee members brought up that what happens if you leave. Mm-hmm. And so that's where we changed that, so to make sure that, you know, we do keep the regents, that they've learned a lot of things, that we just don't want to have that knowledge go away. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Seaton.
Okay. Any other comments on the bill? Can I have a motion, Vice Chair Vasquez?
Yes. I move CSHB 107. I move, I move that we move 29-LS0465-P from the committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes, and that would include the amendment that was just passed by the committee.
Right. Okay, any objections? Okay, we have an objection. Would you like to speak to the objection? I think you have, but...
Sure. Finalize. I think that we're trying to address a perceived problem that I don't know that's a real problem, and I think that we are creating many additional changes and problems for the Board of Regents through looking at a perceived problem, which I don't really believe is real. So thank you.
Okay. So call the roll.
CSHB version P. Representative Price Tompkins?
Yes.
Representative Tallarico?
Yes.
Representative C?
No.
Representative Vasquez?
Yes.
Representative Colburn.
Yes.
Representative Dummer.
Yes.
Chair Keller.
Yes.
Six yeas, one nay.
So HB 107 passes from committee, and is there anything for the good of the order? I'm trying to remember Friday or Monday's bill is HB 156. I have a personal interest in that one. Just put that on the record. It's my bill, so. Anyway, so that Representative Vasquez will. So anyway, with that, we're adjourned at 9:20, 9:40, I'm sorry.